It's time for children's worship, so if any of the kids want to go down to children's worship, you can follow Allison and Grace. Good morning, everybody. It's great to be together with you this morning as we praise and glorify our God. What would you say is the most recognizable psalm? 23rd? Yeah. Now, is that only recognized in Jewish and Christian circles, that psalm? No. And why do you think it's so well known? What?
Times of trouble, people turn to it.
Times of trouble, people turn to it? Okay. So it seems like, you know, any time that you need comfort, this psalm is regularly quoted or read, right? So it's very recognizable to people around the world, not just in, you know, Christian or Jewish circles. Has anybody here spent a lot of time around sheep, though? A little bit. Guy's got a little bit of a farm over here. Okay. But most of us have not, right? We kind of lived in a suburban or urban area, so we've not really grown up in the rural areas. My wife grew up on a farm, too. They had sheep. She didn't raise her hand, though. So most of us know little about raising animals or the different characteristics that those animals might have. And a result of that, a lot of the meanings of the words and phrases in the Psalms are lost on us because we are not familiar with, you know, sheep in general or shepherding. I remember a time when I was maybe 4 or 5 years old. We lived in a rural area, and I was up the road playing with the neighbor boy. We didn't have, like, any farm animals, so I really didn't know the things to do or not to do around animals. Well, the day I was up there, they had a cow, and we was playing around the cow. It's probably not always a good idea to play around a cow, but we was playing around a cow. And I walked behind the cow and not doing anything, and the next thing I know, I'm laying on the ground, flat on my back, very sore. Because when I walked behind the cow, it kicked me with its hind leg so fast that I could not, you know, get out of the way. And she got me right in the gut, and I went flying. So I learned that cows are going to kick you if they're startled or if they're angry or if they're afraid of something. And I guess I made her unhappy in some way. I don't know how. But I do know something about cows now. Okay? I learned from that lesson. I don't walk behind cows anymore. So what are some of the things we think of when someone talks about or says sheep? What's something that comes to your mind?
They're dumb.
Docile. Docile.
Scare easily.
Scare easily.
They're beautiful and white as snow.
They're beautiful and white as snow, yeah.
They do whatever other one does.
They follow, right? Okay. So here's a few fun facts about sheep that I didn't know, some of them. They have a field of vision of almost 360 degrees. That's amazing, don't you think? They have an excellent memory. They have best friends within the flock. Sheep display many emotions, and you can see it in some of their facial expressions. And the ewes are very caring mothers that form very deep bonds with their little ones and can recognize their voices, you know, if they're out wandering away and they know where they can find them at. So today we're going to dig into Psalm 23. And there's many ways to approach this and analyze the psalm, but it has many great lessons contained within it, right? And we could study it over and over, and we can continue to find new truths and powerful messages each time we study it. But we need to remember that, you know, the Bible is not just a random collection of stories that were written over 4,000 years by many different people. Rather, the Bible is a collection of interwoven stories and events that create one story, right? It's the story of God bringing his people back to him that have fallen away through his son, Jesus. And I think today, when we look at Psalms 23, I think this reflects that story quite well. Today, what I want to do is look at the Psalms 23 from the eyes of a shepherd. I was reading a couple lessons by Edwin Crozier that he did a long time ago, and he mentioned a book that's called A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. It was written in 1970, so it's fairly old. But this guy that wrote it, Philip Keller, was raised in East Africa around shepherds, and he was a shepherd actually for 8 years as well when he wrote the book. And so I want to use some of his insights that he had to help us understand the meaning of some of these words in this beautiful psalm so that we have a better and deeper understanding of what they really mean from looking at it from a shepherd's perspective. As we go through the psalm, I want you to notice a few things, though. First, how David writes this based on his personal experience with God by using what he knows intimately. He knows sheep, and he knows shepherding, right? And the way he writes this, he deeply believes what he was writing about God is true, and he describes the things that he sees, that he's experienced about God in this psalm. Secondly, notice that in the first three verses, David talks about God in the third person, where he says he a lot. He's like, he leads you. But then in verses 4 and 5, when he starts talking about going through the dark valley, he moves to a more intimate second-person terminology where he says, you. So he says, you are near me. And so think about why he might do that. And then finally, notice that the first four verses is like a setting that's in the hills and the pastures with the sheep. And then verses 5 and 6 may be shifting to more of a palace setting with a king. So let's read the first three verses here. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. One thing to remember when we go through this psalm is that the term shepherd is a royal metaphor. And what I mean is many of the kings in the Bible are referred to as shepherds. And it's not just in the Bible. Other ancient Eastern literature uses that metaphor as well, that kings are shepherds of the people. So David starts off this psalm by saying that God is a shepherd and then describes the great benefits that he receives by having a great shepherd. David knows firsthand the intimate relationship between a shepherd and his sheep. And he knows with the right shepherd leading them, the sheep will flourish and thrive because the shepherd will care for them. He'll take care of them. He watches over them. He protects them. And he's going to guide them to the places that's going to provide for all their needs. But as we see later, though, in this, the path is not always easy. After proclaiming the Lord is the shepherd, David then starts to describe the benefits of being in the fold of a great shepherd. So he states, I shall not want. David has had quite the life, though, hasn't he? He went from being a shepherd boy leading the sheep out in the field to the king of God's people, Israel. And along the way, he's faced many dangers at being a shepherd. He's feared for his life from King Saul. He's had his own son try to take the throne away from him, Absalom. And he had many bad decisions and mistakes in his life that caused great strife in his life. And he felt that God had walked away from him. But through all that, he's learned that being in God's presence is where true contentment is. He lacks nothing, and he has nothing to worry about. There are some people, though, including us at times, that are not content with God as their shepherd, and they think the grass is greener someplace else. And sheep have the propensity to wander off, looking for something they think is better than what the shepherd has provided for them. But it turns out not to be true. That's something for us to think about as well. The grass is not greener out in the world, even though Satan makes it look very enticing to us. And if we continue to strive for those places, what it will end in is separation from God. We need to learn to be content in God's presence and what he desires for us. And yes, we may have a fence or a boundary around us, but it's for our own protection and for our own good. Then David says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. And these words give you a picture of sheep that are just willing to just lie down in these plush green meadows, right? But Philip Keller says, the strange thing about sheep is that because of their very makeup, it's almost impossible to make them lie down unless four specific requirements are met. And those four requirements are they need to be free from fear of outside attack. Because sheep are fairly helpless, you know, they're timid animals, they're feeble creatures, they don't have any way to protect themselves other than to try to flee. Secondly, they need to be free of tension and friction within the other sheep in the fold. It turns out that there's a lot of infighting within the flock, and there's some sheep that are very domineering over others. So they need to have free of that friction between the group. Also, there needs to be free from the torment of flies and pests. Sheep are not able really to keep flies because they don't have hands, right? They swat these things away. So when they're aggravated by those types of pests, they don't want to lie down. And then fourth, they need to be free of hunger. And sheep, if you leave them to themselves, they would graze the field dry even to the roots of the ground and destroy all the vegetation. And then they'd have to have no food and they would not want to lie down. So without those four conditions, the sheep are never going to lie down in the green pasture. What this describes is not just a serene picture, though, of rest for the sheep, but what it brings to mind is the picture of toil and sweat that the shepherd has gone to for the peace of mind for this and the survival of the flock. He put a lot of effort into it. And that's what Jesus has done for us as well. He came to this earth as one of us. He prepared the way to defeat our enemies. He established the pattern for overcoming tension among brothers and sisters. He drove away pests. He fills our hunger with his word. And it was not just a picture of serenity for Jesus, right? It's a picture of rejection and beating and death as he prepared the way for us by sacrificing himself for us. Then he says, he makes me lie down beside quiet waters. And if you're around, if sheep are around turbulent waters, it would represent a peril to them, and they'd be afraid of it. And if they ventured into the water or they fell in, they would destroy themselves. They're not good swimmers. So they need to have nice, calm waters where they're able to drink from. Also, the sheep's body composition, about 70% water, and they have the ability to live in, you know, dry and arid climates, but they still need water. And Philip Keller says that they get water from three main sources. One is they drink from springs and streams. But the shepherd is the one that has to go first search for those springs and streams that are good quality and calm, that will be peaceful for the sheep to drink from. They also drink from wells, but the wells had to be dug, and the digging is done by the shepherd. And the shepherd has to, you know, bail out the water from the wells to get it to the sheep so they can have access to it. And the third way they can get water is by eating the dew-drenched grass early in the morning. And if the weather's not too hot, actually sheep can go months without drinking water if there's sufficient dew on the grass that they're eating. But it's the shepherd, again, who must prepare the shepherd to be edible with the grass for the sheep to eat. And he needs to recognize if they're not getting enough water, you know, from that dew in the grass that they're eating. So this statement, he leads me beside quiet waters, also says something about the sheep. The sheep must recognize that the water provided by the shepherd is what is best for them. Keller relates a story where he said he watched a bunch of sheep, which were being led down to a magnificent mountain stream. But on the way, several stubborn ewes and their lamb stopped instead to drink from small, dirty pools of water beside the trail. The water was filthy and polluted, not only with the churned-up mud from the passing sheep, but even from manure and urine of previous flocks that had passed that way. Still, the stubborn sheep were quite sure it was the best drink obtainable. The water itself was filthy and unfit for them, contaminated with parasites that would eventually riddle them with internal disease. Are we satisfied with the refreshing, quiet waters that Jesus and God provide? Or do we want to turn aside to our own way and find our own sources of water like the sheep that Keller described? David says in these first two verses that he's able to rest because all of his provisions that he needs to sustain him have been provided by the Lord, his shepherd. And David understood the effort required by the shepherd to make that happen for the sheep. The sheep just don't find it on their own. They had to have a good shepherd to provide for them. Then he restores my soul. David was not perfect, and we aren't either. And he made mistakes throughout his life, and he needed to be restored. And so I think David is hinting here from a shepherd perspective about restoring his sheep, and that's when they become cast or cast down. Here's a couple pictures of what a cast down sheep looks like. And you restore one of those after they've fallen onto their back and they can't get up. And you can actually go see videos of a sheep that's cast. It's really amazing because they're just kind of sitting there flailing around. They can't roll over. So Keller describes this as a cached sheep is a very pathetic sight. Lying on its back, its feet in the air, it flays away frantically, struggling to stand up without success. Sometimes it will bleat a little for help, but generally it lies there lashing about in fright and frustration. If the owner does not arrive on the scene within a reasonably short time, the sheep will die. This is one reason the shepherd must diligently watch for the cached sheep. The other reason is because predators know that a cached sheep is very easy prey. To understand what David means by this, this is what Keller says, that a heavy or fat or long-fleeced heavy wool, and you can see this is 37 pounds of wool there on that sheep, if they lie down comfortably in some little hollow or depression in the ground, it may want to just roll a bit on its side, you know, get a little bit more comfortable and stretch out a little bit. And if they roll just a little bit too far, the center of gravity shifts and they roll over. And then they will start, you know, pawing frantically with their legs. And if they do that too hard, it can cause them to roll over further, and then they're gone. They just can't get back on their own. And so they get that sense of panic, and they just make it worse for themselves. Now, it's quite impossible for them to regain their feet, so the shepherd's got to be on constant watch and restore the sheep before they die in that position. Sometimes we as sheep may not want to do the work necessary and just look for the comfortable places or to have the easy life, and as a result, we may become cast down as well. Sometimes we may have too much wool, allowing the things of the world to weigh us down and cast us in the wrong positions. And sometimes we may be like the fat, heavy sheep because of earthly success and prosperity that we have gained, and we turn our backs on God because we think we have arrived. We don't need God. And when we get like that, we become cast, and we're very easy prey for the devil. I think this is an image of restoring brings clarity to what God, or David had said about the Lord, is doing for his sheep. God is there to pick us up when we fall over and puts us back on our feet. When we try to fix our own problems, we frequently create worse problems for ourselves. And in our efforts to get back on our feet, we usually are turning ourselves over to a more precarious and dangerous position. And at that point, we need the Lord to set us on our feet. We need the Lord to restore us. He says, then, he guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And when we think of shepherds, we often think of someone who's leading. Sheep must be constantly led to new pastures to sustain them. Keller says, if left to themselves, sheep will graze the same hills until they turn to desert waste and pollute their own ground until it is corrupt with disease and parasites. The greatest single safeguard which a shepherd has in handling his flock is to keep them on the move. They must be shifted from pasture to pasture periodically. The shepherd must have a predetermined plan of action, a deliberate planned rotation from one grazing ground to another to preserve the land and sustain the flock. This is precisely the sort of action and the idea that David had in the mind when he was talking about being led in the path of righteousness. So sheep left to themselves will destroy themselves. And it's much like what the writer in Proverbs 14:12 says, where this is what we think. There is a way that seems right to us, but in the end, it leads to death. This says a great deal about our shepherd. He's a caring, loving shepherd that's taken great effort and time in planning our path so that we don't destroy ourselves. But many times we simply don't want to deny ourselves. We don't want to give up our rights to make our own decisions. We don't want to follow. We don't want to be led. And that is dangerous. Too often we don't look to God for guidance. Too often we refuse to look to God to know which path is the right one. We are like sheep simply looking at the here and now and not realizing we are wandering off the path of God. God gives us direction through his word. He gives us direction through when we pray to him, he answers prayers. He gives us direction by sending his son Jesus as our shepherd and our guide. But we have to be willing to pick up our eyes and our heads to see where the shepherd is leading us. We don't have a reason to feel lost or aimless in this life because God has given us purpose and direction in our life. Looking at the last three verses, he says, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies, and you anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." So David says here, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, he won't fear any evil. And evil in this text does not mean moral evil, but it's more about the danger or disaster that is potentially waiting in the area. So the psalm uses the shadow of death as an image to refer to disaster and dangers that the sheep face, and it casts a shadow over them as they travel from spot to spot. Every year, the shepherd leads the sheep up to the mountain pastures, and to get there, they have to travel through the mountains' valleys. The valleys are the best way because they have the easiest grade, they have the best water sources, and they have some of the best grazing areas to get them ready to go up to the mountains. But going through these valleys is a must to reach the goal of the mountaintop pasture land. But the journey can be and is dangerous. Keller explains that the shepherds know why these valleys are dangerous and a shadow of death for the sheep. He says, there are dangers from rampaging rivers during the spring floods. There's avalanches, there are rock slides, there's poisonous plants, there's predators waiting to raid the flock, or a dozen other natural disasters that can destroy the sheep. The shepherd handles and manages sheep through these adverse conditions and was there fully prepared to safeguard the flock and protect them. But in spite of all these hazards, he also knows that this is still the best way to take his flock to get to the high country. With a vigilant, watchful shepherd leading them, the flock was always protected, and the sheep did not have any concerns on that journey because they knew the shepherd would take care of them. Remember who was leading in verse 3, where he leads me in the path of righteousness? It was God leading, right? So is God intentionally leading us into the valleys as well? I think so. And why? Because he knows that to get to the good pastures, you sometimes have to go through the dark valleys. Life isn't a walk in the park. It's more like a trek through the mountains, on top of the world one minute and then down in the valley the next. But the same God who gives you the mountaintop view doesn't let you walk alone in the valleys. We can walk through that dark valley and not be afraid because God is there right beside us walking with us. God has never guaranteed that we will avoid the valleys, but he guarantees that we won't walk the valleys alone. God isn't simply in the valley as a spectator in your life. He's there right beside you to help you. It may be that in that dark valley that you are in where you say, how could a good God lead me to such a difficult place? And if you're in a situation like that, it could be the exact place where you come to experience God's presence the most. Look for him there. So how do we choose to follow our shepherd when he leads us into valleys we'd rather avoid? Well, two things we need to remember about truths of the Lord. One is that he will never lead us carelessly. He plans the path, and he picks the right time to travel them. We need to trust where and when he is leading us. He will also lead us intentionally. He leads us on the right path that he has formed for generations. And if you are living in a crisis now where you don't see any way out, trust in God, because he always has a way. He then turns to and says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. When going through the valleys, the sheep are comforted by the shepherd and his rod and his staff. Keller describes the rod as like a sapling you pull out of the ground, a small tree. You carve one end of it to fit your hand well. And on the other end is typically round, and sometimes they'll put like sharp objects on the round side. And it's used for three main purposes. The first purpose, he says, is discipline. So if the shepherd saw a sheep wandering away on its own or getting too close to a danger or of one sort or the other, the club would go whistling through the air to send the wayward animal scurrying back to the bunch. It's also used for protection. The rod is a weapon to ward off attacks from wild beasts. And when David tells Saul in 1 Samuel 17 that he, you know, attacked and killed a bear and a lion, most likely he used his rod to do that. And then third, it's used for inspection. Because sheep have very thick wool, it's very hard to tell if you have like some type of infection or disease on there. So they'll use that rod to help part and separate the wool and get down to the layer of the skin to actually see if there's disease or pest bothering the sheep. So we can easily see why the rod of protection and inspection brought comfort to David. But the rod of discipline, that's another matter. especially in David's life, of mistakes, right, that had some very serious consequences that came to him as a result of that. But David still found comfort in that discipline. Why? Because he was a shepherd, and he knew and understood the necessity of using the rod for discipline so that the good of the sheep was, you know, protected. He understood what the purpose was, and we as sheep also need to understand the purpose of God's discipline towards us as well. And when you look at Hebrews 12, it explains why God does that. The staff is also part of the equipment that the shepherd uses. It's a long, slender walking stick with the hook on the end. And while the shepherd uses it for walking and leaning on, it's got some very specific purposes when he's shepherding. Keller says that the hook on the staff would be used to draw the sheep that are kind of on the fringes and walking away in the wrong direction and pulling them back into the flock. He also said it's used for drawing a sheep towards him so that he can start looking for disease and pests that are bothering that sheep. He also says it's used for guiding the sheep on the path as the shepherd's walking going along. And they would put the staff and put it on the side of the sheep and just put some gentle pressure there and kind of guide them back to where he wants them to go so they stay on the path that he wants to lead. And it was also used for rescuing sheep. Sheep are stubborn creatures and often get themselves into dilemmas they can't get themselves out of. And that's where people say sheep are dumb, right? So there's instances, he said, where they strive to get just a few extra mouthfuls of grass and they push their way into brambles or bushes and get stuck. And sometimes even slip off the edge of a cliff and can't get back up. So the shepherd used that hook to pull them out of those areas and rescue them from those traps. And then David says, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies." And there are two possible ways to look at this verse. We generally look at it as being a king's banquet table in a palace, which makes sense when we consider that shepherd is a term that is used for kings as well. But a second way to look at it is, as Keller would suggest, is that it could refer to the tablelands on the mountain to which the sheep have been journeying. I had one picture here. Let me find the picture. I thought I had a picture. Oh, this one here. This one here? This would be considered like a tableland area on a mountain. Okay. So what Keller says is that it could refer to the tableland on a mountain like that to which the sheep has been journeying. Even on the higher ground, the enemies stalk, and they kind of perch themselves on the rim around that area, just looking for the chance to, you know, attack the sheep and get them. But you got the shepherd there who's ever watching over the sheep to make sure that they're protected. So Keller describes the great length the shepherd actually goes through in preparing the tableland pastures each year. He says, early in the season, he actually goes up and does kind of a scouting journey to see the areas that he wants to go to and kind of mark out some of those areas. And then before the sheep arrive, he's going to make another expedition or two to prepare the tableland for them. Then he takes along some salt and other minerals, and he distributes that on different areas of the land that will help provide for the sheep later in the summer because they need minerals just like we do when we eat. So he also will decide the best grazing areas that he's going to use and where his camps are going to be located so his sheep will have the best bedding area. So he goes through a lot of preparation. He also looks for signs of predators like the wolves, coyotes, bears, lions. And often the predators, like I mentioned, are up on the rim watching every movement the sheep make, hoping they can make a swift attack and catch one or two. But the shepherd meticulously prepares the table, or that tableland, for his sheep so they have everything they need and would want, even in the presence of their enemies that surround them. So I think both of those scenarios, being at a king's table or this tableland picture, fits what David is talking about. When we think of the last two verses of this psalm, we might think that they're out of place a little bit. We've gone from looking at a shepherd and sheep, and now we're sitting at a table and we're feasting. But the shift in imagery is not as out of place as you might think, because we mentioned earlier that kings are referred to as shepherds. So now the shepherd king we are following gives us a place at his banquet table, enjoying provisions and rest, even in the presence of the enemies that surround us. The lavish blessings and treatment we receive from God is truly remarkable. God is the source of our joy, comfort, and restoration. What we receive from the Lord is so much and so great that we are well filled and we are overflowing. To have hope in the Lord is not that in life we will avoid pain and difficulty. Rather, we will have a full, satisfying life of because what we go through if we trust in God. Our cup is full. We are completely satisfied, overflowing with the blessings that God has given to us, and that makes us content. To sit at the banquet table of our Shepherd King pictures our ultimate communion and fellowship with God himself. And then he says at the end, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. David began the psalm with proclaiming the Lord is my shepherd, and he ends it here with, I will dwell in the land or the house of the Lord forever. And why wouldn't he want to remain there? He knows that God's provided everything he needs and is always taking care of him. He would be foolish to seek the shepherding from another master. Who else could be that good? David says that he's going to dwell in that house all the days of his life. A home with God represents having peaceful rest, having all provisions we need, having safety from the world, and having blessings that overflow. A home is where you want to be. Home is a place you always want to come back to. So, how does this relate to our scripture reading in John 10? Let's not sing a song yet. So we see in Psalms 23 that the shepherd does everything he can to care for his sheep, to provide for them, to protect them, keep them safe from any disaster, danger, or predators that might be out there. And like David saw the Lord as his good shepherd, we are told that Jesus is our good shepherd in John 10. He puts us above himself when he lays his life down for us. In John 10:14, he says, I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. He is communicating a deep and personal commitment to provide for us, to take care of us and protect us in our vulnerable state as weak sheep. Likewise, when we know Jesus, it means we choose to trust him deeply and personally. We surrender our will to obey what he says, and we listen to his voice. When we have lost our way, we can find great comfort in knowing we belong to a loving God who calls us by name. He knows each of us. Perhaps we have forged our own path and listened to the wrong voices, but our good shepherd still seeks us. He calls us to return to him. Why is God so relentless in his pursuit of us, the wayward sheep? Because our Heavenly Father desires to gather us into his loving care. In his good pasture, he provides nourishment, he provides protection, and he's going to navigate with us through our days on earth. Where else can we find such a faithful love that seeks us out until we are found? Who else can provide everything we need all the days of our lives? Only a holy God can fulfill those promises. Let's hold on to him. Jesus himself wants to be your shepherd, and not just any shepherd. He was the good shepherd. He is the only way to eternal life where you are able to feast at the table in the house of God. Are you willing to listen to his voice and ignore the voices of the world that try to pull us away from God? Are you willing to follow God in the path he takes you on? Are you willing to change the path you're on today to get right with God? You have time now, if you are ready to put on Christ in baptism and let him become your good shepherd, or if you are in need of prayers to get back on God's path for your life, we'd ask you to come as we sing about the good shepherd.